And this is the Riot Act Business Profile, Episode 2. It's the 19th of December, and Tim and John, that's myself, are at Bottles of Australia talking to Tony Pemmer out in Hume. Tony, thank you for joining us, letting us look at your factory today.
My pleasure.
All right, Tony, let's talk about Bottles of Australia. What exactly is it? What is it you sell?
Bottles of Australia manufactures sports drink bottles for the major sporting teams, as well as fitness centres and clubs. So it's basically a mobile billboard, Tim.
A mobile billboard. Okay.
So you consider that the advertising on the bottles is more of the product than the bottle itself?
I think that's what distinguishes it from other products in the marketplace.
Right.
As opposed to just a generic drink bottle. People tend to be more brand aware. And so, you know, when they're buying their Adidas shorts or their, you know, Puma shoes, they want to match brands to the rest of their outfit or promote their corporate image.
Right. We should just point out you're quite unusual in that you're actually manufacturing here in Canberra with the design and printing of the labels on the bottles.
Yep.
It's a question from down our list, but why manufacturing Canberra?
We really love Canberra. My wife is born and bred a girl in Canberra, and we just really like it here. So her family's here. And let's face it, it's only 3 hours to Sydney and a couple of hours to the coast. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that as a limitation for connecting with your customers? Obviously, you already mentioned names like Puma and ASICS, which are not really Canberra businesses. Is it a limitation to connecting with those types of customers?
The biggest limitation for our business within Canberra, and in fact, it helped us decide which way we were going to go, was getting the skilled staff to run the equipment. We could invest, you know, $1 million on moulding equipment and bring moulding into house rather than have it contracted out in Sydney. But our opportunity to recruit skilled staff to run the equipment is very, very slim. So our staff tend to get trained from the ground up rather than come to us with set skills.
Okay, do you want to tell us more about your customers? As in the who orders the bottles.
Okay. As far as custom printed bottles, the client bases range quite dramatically because it could be a small sporting club or a school, or it could be, you know, BHP Billiton that are using it for their OH&S for their staff, so they've got access to water. It could be the Australian Olympic team uses our product, and the quantities can vary quite dramatically, so it's important that from a manufacturing process that we have the facility to do small production runs, specialist runs for people.
What would be the smallest sort of run?
50 bottles will be the smallest that we'll do.
And that goes up to
100,000 plus, just depending on what the client wants. And it's also the number of colours that we print.
Mm-hmm.
So organisations like Warner Brothers Movie World, for example, that have got very complicated designs and up to 8 colours, comparing it, say, to the National Bank, which is a 2-colour design.
Hmm.
So it needs to go through the process quite differently.
How would the prices range just with increasing the number of colours?
Oh, you'll add anywhere between 10 to 20 cents to cover the extra colours that are added on.
Okay.
Do you find operating out of Canberra adds much overhead in terms of distributing a product to customers who aren't based in Canberra?
The actual increase in cost is from the freight factor is around 4 cents an item in and then back out. Because we're a national and international supplier, you have to note that it doesn't matter if I'm in Sydney, I've still got to freight it to Melbourne, I've still got to freight it to Brisbane or Perth or New Zealand. So really it's just the freight that
it's fairly constant cost, regardless of where you'd be based.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. If we were in Dubbo, it would be obviously a little bit different to freight out of, but to get it there is much the same as getting it to here.
Mm.
And we're fortunate we've got some very good suppliers on the freight side, so we've been able to keep our costs down while we've been able to grow.
You've obviously sort of developed a fair customer base. How long was it taking to get to where you are today?
The business started in 1989. But the actual decoration part of our business didn't start to 91. And it was...
So what were you doing between 89 and 91?
Well, it, the business started importing stickers from Hawaii to sell through a bicycle retail outlet, and then it developed to other products and other brands that we got recommended to, and we were importing predominantly product out of the US. So it was unique BMX stuff that wasn't readily available. We started supplying our own retail outlet. That led to five other outlets. Then other people would contact us, and it grew from there. So all of a sudden, we were supplying 400 bike shops around Australia with the product that we were importing.
Right, and from there, how did you settle on bottles?
Well, one of the companies that we were importing for was a company called Specialized, which is one of the largest mountain bike and road bike manufacturer and distributors, and we were the Australian distributor for them for 4 years. Part of their range was a custom printed bottle that they used to manufacture in California. What we found was the delays in importing that product gave us an opportunity that we could actually bring their bottle in but actually decorate it here. Then we set up an agreement where we could manufacture here and still decorate. So it took about 6 months of research and development to, because you got to remember it back in 91 when our first printing machine arrived, none of us knew how to print. So it's surprising what you learn along the way and the costly mistakes that occur. But since then, we've tended to be the benchmark for custom printed bottles. We were the first Australian company to produce the bicycle-shaped bottle in Australia. Up until then, the product was imported out of Taiwan, China, Italy, France, and the US, predominantly out of those markets.
So you're really the forerunner for custom printed bottles in Australia?
For the sports drink bottles, yeah. Got to remember, the process to print a sports bottle is no different to printing a shampoo bottle. So a lot of the plastic moulding companies in Sydney and Melbourne and around Australia that were already producing containers, because the process that we do is basically called container decorating, was already in place. But the sports bottle, as it, you know, I suppose became a common shape, and the bicycle shape wasn't here. It was basically used on a bike bottle, that was it. Not as a promotional item, where in the US and other markets around the world it had been a promotional product item for quite some time.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you were doing before you started Biotone?
Beforehand, my wife and I had a bicycle retail outlet, and I suppose my business career started when I was 19 at Batemans Bay in a toy store and bike shop, and then it grew. We bought out a nursery store and changed that into a sports and bike shop and brought the nursery products into the toy store. Then we went from there to buying a shop in Canberra, and we moved up to Canberra. Along the way, it's been a journey between my wife and I. We both have quite different core skills, and Mary and I have sort of been a very good tag team partnership to be able to go forward. So right back from the early days, and especially with Bottles of Australia, it's been very much a team development. Yeah, it's one of those sort of things. It's really handy to have two heads to bounce off instead of one. Good ideas don't come from one person all the time. A lot of it comes from just staff, from clients, from a lot of things along the way. And if you're, I suppose, in the right place at the right time, sometimes you can take those ideas and make a difference.
So being open to new ideas is an important part.
Without a doubt. Even now, as the leader within the sports drink bottle market, we would be very foolish not to be open to new and innovative ideas or ink technologies or colours of bottles. Some of the bottle colours that we used, say, 4 years ago, weren't even in the car market. And it's interesting when you see, you know, the metallic light blues that Ford has been using now for some time, we've actually had in our range for many years because of the colour development that was happening in Europe that we picked up on and brought it into our technology.
You mentioned it when we were walking around the floor about how effectively you're tying into the fashion item,
yep,
kind of thing, and your colour technologies. What sort of lead time do you have to look in advance for those sort of colours and designs?
Well, I guess the timing is set a lot of the time by our clients, and they're looking for 12 to 18 months out for colour development and where they're planning to go. Because we tend to, I suppose, work in partnership with a lot of our clients and look at what will be the fashion trends for next year, for example, or the year after. So if a company like Running Bear is bringing out a brand new top and they want to match a certain colour, if we know far enough in advance, we can be part of that development for them. So they'll provide us with colour swatches and we can look at our range and sort of to get plastics that will match, you know, what will be the latest colour in shoes or shorts or whatever. Or it could just be a trim item, because our item is an accessory item to a lot of the major sporting brands, so it sort of fits in where they have sports bags, the wallets, the key tags, all that sort of side of it. A lot of the time they're looking at a story to sell, so they're looking at a range that has some continuity between it. So if we went off on our merry way developing colours that were of no use to those major sporting brands, all of a sudden they'd just sit on our shelves. They may sell through the promotional product area, but may not work for the sports brands.
Hmm. How many hours a week do you think the business takes up at the moment?
Of your time?
Of my time? Well, I suppose in the last 2 years it's taking up less and less of my time, because of other business interests that Mary and I have. So we're tending to pull ourselves further away from it. Because we have a staff of sort of fluctuates between sort of 26 and 28 people, in the last couple of years our focus has been making ourselves dispensable, that if we're not here that the business still runs. And it's really
important. It's reached that level of maturity that it can run itself?
Well, I think where a lot of businesses suffer is, or business people suffer, is they feel that they're the only ones that can put the stamp on the envelope, or they're the only person who can make the decisions. So they tend to be very closed in the way that they treat their staff, where if you tend to run a bit of more of an open book policy, where what the staff know what you need from a budgeting perspective or sales, or in our case, you know, how important it is to keep our reject rates low, things like that, then you can then have the freedom. I suppose from an entrepreneurial point of view, it's about having time just to think about where you're going to go next. So working, I suppose, on the business rather than in the business, you know, is a real important thing. And you hear that catchphrase all the time, but very few businesses actually do it. So it's having a bit of a strategic focus, not just for the business, but also for yourself personally. You know, what keeps you motivated? When's big enough? Because I suppose over all the years for Mary and I, it hasn't been about the, you know, driving the Porsche or whatever out the front. That sort of thing doesn't motivate us. We want to be successful at what we do. We want to satisfy our clients, and we want the business to grow and be successful. You know, often you'll see the brand new BMW parked out the front of a small business when the business can't handle it. You know? So you have to reinvest. You know, the business was started, you know, with a $5,000 overdraft, but to actually duplicate our business today, just in plant and equipment without any staff or customers or anything else, you'd be looking at an investment of over $2 million. Yeah. So it's quite a sizable leap from where we started to here. And to cover that sort of growth, yeah, it takes some serious planning from a cash flow perspective and a bit of risk taking. Don't need to go to the casino when you can
run a business.
When you can risk your money.
You can turn 5,000 into 2 million.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
What do you think the biggest challenges is of yours has been to get into the business to where it is now?
I would say initially the biggest challenges was the financial aspect of it, having enough resources to fund the growth of the business, and also to fund the development of it. So, you know, one thing's to have an investment in the business is going well, but if you grow too quickly, you can end up trading yourself out of business, because it's not like, say, in retail, when you're buying the stock, it's on your shelf, but everyone that comes in that takes the stock actually pays for it. Well, that's supposed to be the process in one way or another. But for us, because we run accounts, it means that you have to fund those accounts to, you know, good clients, I guess, are paying in 30 to 45 days. Average clients are probably paying closer to 60. And a lot are sort of sitting between 60 to 90 at the beginning of a month. So it's about trying to balance those debtors against your creditors. And we've been fortunate along the way that our creditors have had faith in us, and I suppose have invested in our concept and where we're going. And they've been able to help us grow. Where I think when you start a business, often you underestimate the resources that are going to be needed to take it forward. You know, people will hold back on what they borrow so that they don't have big loans, but only to find that they hit a brick wall 6 months down the track where they don't have enough.
And they're not creditworthy at that point either.
No, because they're really stuck. So they're better off to, so if you've got an idea and you're really, really confident on it, be prepared to borrow more than you think you need initially, even if you don't need it or you don't see that you need it. It will help fund the growth of the business, maybe not initially, but 6 or 12 months down the track. And that way you'll have a streamlined development and growth.
Mm.
It's really important to have enough resources there.
Mm.
You mentioned sort of your business growth and the fact that you're trying to step out of the business and how to run more self-sufficiently. Where do you see it, Bottles of Australia, in 5 or 10 years' time?
I don't know if I'll be here in 5 or 10 years' time. The business, I would hope that the business would be, but I may not be part of Bottles of Australia.
So you're stepping away in management, part of making it sale ready?
Well, I guess it's looking towards the future. You know, the business started in 1989. How far can I take it? You know, sometimes a new broom sweeps clean, and for the growth of the business, you need people with a fresh head to step in. And Matthew Watson, our general manager, is taking more and more of a lead role in the business. So I guess part of my superannuation, I guess, because of our money's been invested more and more in our business, is looking at, well, where's the business going? Like I said, when's big enough, you know, somebody else can take it to the next level. And I think it's important that when people think of selling their business, it's not much point of doing it when it reaches right at its peak and has nowhere to go. I think you're better off, if you're going to make the move out of a business, to step away while there's still good growth in the business for the new owner to take advantage of.
Mm.
It makes the business more valuable. Obviously, a business that has got that can run by itself without its owners is certainly more valuable than one that depends on... If the business depended on me to be here, you know, 24/7 to run...
Who'd want to buy that?
Yeah. You know, someone who... You've got to remember that business should be treated as an investment, not just, you know, something to do as a money pit where you just keep throwing your money in. Most people buy a business or start a business and it becomes a job.
Hmm.
A business isn't a job. The business should be able to support you as an employee, not as someone who's shackled to it 24/7. That's why you see so much burnout.
Mm.
It's about trust.
Being able to trust the people who work for you.
Trust the staff, yeah. I think if you're open and honest with them and they understand the business, they will invest their time and effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and everybody has different management styles. We very much believe in empowerment and accountability, and some people can handle that, some people can't. And yeah, over the years we've had plenty of people come and go, but our core team has still remained, and the business has grown because of that. So if the business does well, they do well.
Yeah. Talking about your staff, you mentioned earlier that for the skills needed here, you very much have to provide the training in the job.
Yeah.
Where do you recruit your staff from?
It's very interesting because some of the staff have come from referrals. so-and-so is looking for a job and they'd like to start. Some people start in our Lidding area, which is piecework, so they might have want a bit of part-time work and they'll start there and then have the opportunity to step into production and then get trained. Sometimes we use the Canberra Times for advertising. Sometimes it's just a sign out the front of the factory that will bring staff in. But for us, it's trying to get the right mix of person for our team. That's probably the key to the success within the work environment. A lot of the time you can train technical skills, but you can't teach personality. You can't train people to get on with other people.
Mm.
So it's important that when we select the staff, that we involve the people that they've got to work with. So I might sit down with Matt or with Mary and do the first round interviews, but we certainly wouldn't do the second round interviews or hire the person without involving their core team leader or someone that they're going to be working with.
Mm.
Because I might think they're the greatest person since sliced bread.
But you're not the one who has to work with them.
Yeah, and then personalities, we're all individuals, yeah.
Mm.
And it's important that the people that are here want to be here. And if they don't, there's a big wide open world out there and they're welcome to work anywhere. But if they're here, I just want them to be happy to be here and to do their job. That way we can grow and they can grow.
If there was, one particular quality that you were looking for in an employee or that would make an employee a success either in this business or some other business, what do you think that quality would be?
Flexibility and willingness to change and grow. And or to be at least open if they don't want to move up along the lines. Often employees will take on, like they'll get an opportunity for a promotion, say, or to take on more responsibility in a different role, and they'll take it because they feel that they need to take it. And some people, I might see something in that person that I feel that they can really do a great job and really go forward, but deep down that person may not want to grow. Or it's not they don't want to grow, they're happy to do the job that they're currently doing. So maybe they don't want the headaches or the extra responsibility. It's important that they're open enough to be able to tell the employer, like myself, that no, they're happy to do what they want to do. But also that if they do want to move forward, that as they move forward, they still don't lose their core skills. Some people move along and then forget about how they used to do another task. And the success of our business is having the ability that people can move within the company. So it's when it's all hands on deck that people actually get in and have a go. Just because you're the graphic designer doesn't mean that you have to be stuck in front of a computer all the time. And if you want to be involved in the business and you want the opportunity to maybe be in production for a couple of days and see what that's like and understand what production needs from the graphics department, it's a really good opportunity to do it. And we encourage people to have a go at different things. They can always change back to the job that they used to do.
Do you think that's the most satisfying thing about running a business for you?
I think the buzz for me is probably seeing something develop from nothing, seeing your product, whether it be in, like here we are based in Canberra and you could be in Perth and a bike rides past and your product is on that bike, or to walk into a sports shop in Fiji and see on the shelf your product sitting there. I think that's a real buzz, it's to see that it's a little product, but the majority of people have got our product in their cupboard. And I think, if people look at the bottom of their sports bottle, it should have BOA or Bottles of Australia logo on the bottom. And if it doesn't, they should just throw it out for sure.
It's rubbish, right?
but I think the being realistic, it is about seeing that growth.
Mm.
And just being able to have an idea or a concept and go off and develop it and then bring it to market.
Mm.
There's a certain amount of buzz in that.
Yeah. How do you go about promoting the business?
Promotion over the years has changed quite a lot. Initially, we used to run full-page magazine ads in trade journals and sports mags and that sort of thing, developing and promoting who at that stage was a company called Boss Racing, and we went through a name change to Bottles of Australia. And as the business grew, we were able to reduce our advertising budget more and more down within the normal press media. So we tend to do a number of things. One, the promotion and products market has changed quite a bit, and a lot of our clients develop their own catalogues that they use and promote to their clients. So we'll do some subsidised advertising in their catalogue. So we might take a 2-page spread in a 30-page book promoting our product, and we'll subsidise that cost for that client. In the other side of it, we've always been involved with supporting sporting teams and cycling teams like the Academy of Sport. We've been a long time supporter of the ACT Academy of Sport. We've also, the last six Olympic teams have used our product. In recent years, over the last 3 years, we've invested in the Canberra Capitals. And this year we've increased our sponsorship for the Capitals, as well as supplying product to more WNBL teams around Australia. So most of the women's elite basketball teams use our product now as well. The Waratahs are using our product. The Brumbies are using it. And to give you an idea, at the Commonwealth Games team, we supplied product to not only the Australian team, but the Singapore team, and also the Fijian team as well. So sometimes it's about having the right teams use our product are important to us.
Do you find you get business through that?
It's very hard to quantify. It's hard to know whether people rush in and buy our product, because we tend to be a name behind the name. So if BHP is the name behind BlueScope Steel, for example, we're sort of Barra is the name behind a lot of other sporting brands. And so what we have, we develop, is that when people do want to use our product, or predominantly our clients instead of necessarily the consumer, choose our product over another one because it performs or it does its job right, it doesn't leak in people's bags, all that sort of thing, is important to the brand development. And I think we got asked whether our semi-trailer with the logos blasted down the side actually developed sales as well. And it's interesting, occasionally you'll get a phone call that says, I've seen the truck going past on the highway and I took the number down and gave you a call. Or with the Capitals, for example, it's probably taken the last 3 years to develop an association with their brand. The Transact Capitals has quite a strong brand, not only in Canberra but also nationally, because of Lauren Jackson's involvement.
Which doesn't do Transact much good across the country, because they don't sell out of the market, but you...
For me, it does. Yeah. So, and because we have tended to be supportive of the players, and we tend to be more associated with the people who use the product, as opposed to just the corporate structure of the basketball team or the Academy of Sport, it's important for us to have a product that the athletes actually want to use. What's the point in developing something that they don't like to use? It's one of those sort of things.
If you was a, in terms of regulations, if we look at, say, just the local government to start with, if there was a policy that you could change in the ACT, what would it be? Would it either help or, make it easier for your business? Or...
Okay, well, looking, one of the things I was really surprised with was the Department of Business ACT, which had helped us along the way with their grant scheme for some of our product development, and also advice and having the resources to bring in professional speakers on business development. I was really surprised when the current ACT government decided to cut back their staffing levels so dramatically. But yeah, I think it was like from 46 staff to 15 or something like that. And sometimes I suppose people who aren't in business probably look at that and say, well, we shouldn't be doing that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, if there's a way to help businesses grow and develop, Yeah, then there's a way to employ people and create different job opportunities.
So you'd say they had been effective in the past at fostering
business? For our business, I would say yes, without a doubt. Would we have gone ahead with projects if we wouldn't have had their support? Yes, we would have, because we didn't take projects to them or concepts that weren't going to work, or we didn't believe in anyway. So it wasn't pie-in-the-sky stuff, but it allowed us to fast-track it. So instead of bringing a project to market 5 years down the track, which may have been too late because of market shifts or trend changes, it allowed us to bring products to market a lot earlier. And also just to get the right, sometimes the right advice, you know, that you can, you've got a central place where you can give them a call. They understand business across the board, not just our business, but other businesses as well. And I think that's probably a bit of a disappointment to see.
So was there a synergy there where they'd say, oh, hang on, these guys over in Fishwick are doing something that could be helpful to you?
Oh, without a doubt.
Right.
Yeah, there was always an opportunity where they would see an idea or a concept that they thought, wow, maybe you could utilise that in your process. Mm. So maybe it was, you know, someone who had developed a certain technology with ultraviolet light, because we use ultraviolet light as part of our curing process, it gives us an opportunity to get together with them to bounce the ideas. And because of we're a manufacturer at the grassroots, sometimes it allows us to test concepts for people as well.
Mm.
So it may be, you know, a new sort of glue or an adhesive that's going to actually be developed in plastics. Well, that's what we know. So, for example, it also allowed us to also use University of Canberra's industrial design area to develop some work with students there to help bring them forward, because we're working with live products, not airy-fairy concepts.
Mm.
And live production flows as well, which I imagine goes into design in a major way.
Without a doubt. It's one thing to come up with a design, but a lot of the industrial designers here don't have opportunities to deal with people who will bring the product to actual market, and not only to work with us from that end of it, but also other consultants or tool makers and stuff that we work with within the plastics area. So it's interesting, like two of the industrial designers that we worked with over a 2-year period, went from their second to their fourth year time, I suppose it's only 3 years, and now both working for Breville. And both those designers contribute their involvement with us as a manufacturer and dealing with real products, which gave them a huge advantage and a leg up. Now, part of that, I suppose, when you refer it back to Business ACT, is that they've got an opportunity there to really get to know a lot of businesses across Canberra. So the ones that can work together have the opportunity to share the intellectual property to develop a concept or an idea. It takes time. Like, to bring a new product to market will take at least 12 months and could be a two or three year development. Just in our product, a simple plastic drink bottle with a label on it. It's because the labelling isn't part of it. It's about the bottle development. So if we want to bring a new design or a new, just to make a mould for a lid, in Australia, it takes 12 to 16 weeks just to have that done. So it's about having that that time and also the resources to call
now,
on.
Moving on from that, I wanted to ask, you get your bottles moulded in Sydney, correct? An awful lot of other businesses are getting everything done in China these days. Do you find, I guess, you've got lower shipping costs from Sydney and more responsive design? Does that make up for the...
Look, we could import bottles out of China cheaper than we can produce them in Sydney. In fact, sometimes we can buy a product out of China that would be less than the raw materials cost us here in Australia.
Right.
But at the end of the... And we do import some range, but only in our outdoor product range, like the aluminium bottles, which aren't produced here in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But in our normal sports bottle range, it's all Australian made. I think it's the responsive time mm-hmm. to be able to have it moulded and brought into house and to be flexible. And we've been fortunate that our contract moulders have been flexible. So when we need short runs or small changes, they can do it.
So it's the bespoke nature of the manufacturing that keeps you going with Australian suppliers.
Well, I think so. And I think that, you've always got to be mindful that when you're developing a product, you can't just have it a constant increase in pricing. So if we think back to when we started to produce the product back in 91, or say 92 when we were producing in Australia, our product pricing had actually dropped considerably over that time. It's only in recent years where our pricing's actually gone up due to raw material costs, due to the oil, because it's we use polyethylene, so the cost of raw materials had gone up, and obviously some of the labour side of it. But a lot of what we've been focused on is trying to reduce our internal costs so that our end customer isn't paying for our inefficiencies. Mm-hmm. So we need to be as efficient as we can, and part of that's by reducing reject rates or the flow of our facility so the product moves through with the least amount of hassle.
Mm. Well, we were very impressed the way the length of the factory... the product moves one way.
One big conveyor belt.
Yeah. Mm. Well, there's not much point having product going backwards and forwards over the top of each other.
Mm.
Even from a warehousing and storage perspective, if you're in business and you're a wholesaler or distributor, where you're not even producing, but you're in this tiny warehouse and you've got to move three pallets to get to one pallet behind so you can sell that one product, there's a lot of hidden costs there that people never account for. So they look at maybe their rental costs for their space and they see that as a fixed cost. But the cost that they don't see is, moving product around is expensive.
Mm.
So that's the sort of things where businesses need to look at is not just what's necessarily written down on paper, but if they've got a staff member who's having to constantly move product to get to other product.
Mm, which happens a lot in the retail industry.
Heaps and heaps, because they know they want the front end space, but their storage space out the back takes a person a long time to go and find the product and bring it back to the shelf. Well, it all comes at a cost, and you've got to be aware of that.
Mm. If we were to talk about federal government policy, what changes could be made there to make your business easier?
I suppose over the years, irregardless of what government has been in or hasn't been in, we've tended to just focus on our growth and our own work within the rules, I suppose. But what could the federal government do? I don't know. As far as what we've utilised the federal government for, mainly is with Austrade, and to help us with our export developments, and they seem to be doing an okay sort of job. We've had no sort of major problems there. I think for us, the federal government, if they can keep the interest rates low, it helps us grow. That's obviously, that would be the big clincher. Mm. With borrowings, even on plant and equipment, if you can keep the interest rates down, that's going to make a difference. I can remember when we were paying 22% interest on an overdraft and on $500,000. It was pretty hard to make money at that sort of thing.
Mm.
But I don't think they're doing that bad a job for our business. There's nothing that they're doing that's really impacting us one way or another. And they're developing more free trade agreements.
Mm.
So I guess what we're looking at is the opportunity for further exports.
Mm.
With countries that they've set that up with.
So you find that at least there's potential in those fields?
I think it has got the potential for us to increase our business because of that. But obviously, any free trade agreement, there's probably quite a lot of trade-offs that they're doing in
mm-hmm.
at other ends of it. But I think our business is probably no different to most businesses. You just get on and do the job, and you just hope that they get on and do their job.
So tax rates aren't something that's a worry for this sort of business then?
For personal or for the company?
Well, it's a constant refrain of the international business community that tax rates in Australia discourage investment. I guess if you're already living here, that you'd be bound up.
Yeah, and I suppose if we were in a different market and understood their tax rates and what the advantage or disadvantage is for us to be in a different place,
mm-hmm.
That might be something to work on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... for the company tax rate, it'd be very interesting if you just had a flat tax rate for every business. You'd probably find you'd pull in a lot more income for everyone across the board, and also make the system a lot easier. No different to the, I suppose it's the other end of the GST, isn't it?
It's
if you know that you've got to pay 5% across the board in tax, well then that's how it is. But all of a sudden you've just freed up a huge resource in the government because everyone just pays it forward and it just goes.
What would you say is the biggest risk that you have to manage with this business?
The biggest risk? Staff. Staff would be the biggest risk, because it's about trying to retain your good people. And I suppose you referred to the government before, the amount of wages that get paid to lower level public servants, for example, comparing it to private enterprise, there's a shortage of staff out there. So it's about trying to look after people and be able to afford to put more people on. That's probably the hardest thing over the years, is to have the right people and then be able to keep them.
Is there anything you feel we haven't covered here that you'd like to put on the record?
Except for my shoe size and blood type?
Well,
but I think, I encourage people that if they've got an idea and a concept, that if they really believe in it, it's about taking the risk and having a go. And a lot of people go, oh, people should do this, but they're not prepared to take the risk. And business is a risk. No different. You go to the casino, sometimes it's red, sometimes it's black. And having an idea and a concept and being prepared to take a risk in it, if you really take the time to do it, you could find it could be more rewarding than what you expect it to be. And not just from a financial point of view, but also from a personal perspective.
Fantastic. Well, that's just my last question as well.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon.